Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
There's a story about a family of mice who lived all their lives in a large piano. And into their piano world came the sound of the instrument, filling all the dark spaces with sound and harmony and melody. And at first, the mice were pretty impressed by it. They drew comfort from the thought that there was someone who was making that music, even though that person was invisible to them. That they loved to think of this great player who they just couldn't see. And then one day, a daring mouse climbed up part of the piano and then returned very thoughtful. He had discovered how music was made. Wires were the secret. Tightly stretched, graduated links of wire which were struck and they trembled and they vibrated. And now all the mice had to revise all of their old beliefs. With this new understanding, none but the very most conservative of mice could continue to believe in an unseen artist. Well, later, another daring explorer went off and then carried the explanation even further. Turns out hammers were the secret. Hammers that seemed to strike and dance and leap on the wires. And this was a far more complicated theory, but it all went to show that they lived in a purely mechanical, mathematical world. And so the unseen player who made the music came to be thought of as a myth. But even still, the pianist continued to play. This week, we are starting a brand new teaching series called Things That Make You Go, Hmm. We're going to talk about three things that lead many to suspect that there is an unseen artist composing the music of life. Three things that most people would say seem to point to the existence of something beyond, of something supernatural in the world. Three things that make you go, hmm. And we'll be talking about today the wonder of nature and about the voice inside of us that tells us there has to be more than this. And the evidence we see when we meet someone who has a radically transformed life. There's a passage in the Old Testament of the Bible where God is speaking and he says this. We put all the Bible verses on the screen for you. He says, I revealed myself to those who did not ask for me. I was found by those who did not seek me. To a nation that did not call on my name, I said, here am I, here am I. All day long, I have held out my hand to an obstinate people. Basically, the idea is that God has left clues all over the place to help people to seek him and believe in him and find him. It's kind of evidence for people who aren't looking for evidence. There is, and we've talked about this at various times in the past, there's all kinds of evidence if you're willing to do the research. If you will open books and go to the library, there's so much evidence for God and Jesus and the Bible. But this is different. This is evidence for people who aren't willing to look for the evidence, but it's there nonetheless. And in this series, we're going to look at three of those clues. Now, as we're getting into this, maybe you're feeling a little bit skeptical. Maybe you're here today or you're watching online, and that does not necessarily mean, though, that you believe any of this. We get lots of people like that. That's great. Maybe you're just curious. That's okay. I just want to encourage you to be here for each of the 3 weeks. This is already one. You're one-third of the way there. Yes. And just to listen with an open mind. This series is not intended at all to prove that all your ideas about the world are wrong. It's just, we're just going to take an honest look at some of the questions I think a lot of us are asking. So, have you ever been in a spot where you were able to see like a mazillion stars at night? This week, I've been waking up in the middle of the night. I've been hating it, like 3 or 4 in the morning. One morning, I woke up. It was 2 o'clock, and I was like, I've got to fall back asleep, and I couldn't, and at 2:30, I was like, screw it, and I went outside and sat down in my backyard, and I've been in places with less light, but man, there's just so many stars, and there was this one star. Like, when you're in that spot, and you look up, don't you have this sense of, like, whoa, right? Have you been there where it just kind of gives you a sense of feeling overwhelmed by your smallness? You know, that sense that there's got to be something out there. And maybe that feeling made you go, Did you know that that our universe is at least 30 billion light years across and composed of perhaps 100 billion galaxies, and each of those galaxies contains perhaps hundreds of billions of stars? It's like mind-boggling when you start thinking about it. So there's one star that's relatively close to us in our universe called Epsilon. Epsilon is big. It's a star like our sun. If you hollowed out Epsilon, which you can't, and you put our sun into it, you could actually, Epsilon could contain, check this, 2.3 billion of our suns. 2.3 billion of our suns could fit into Epsilon. When you think about you in comparison with the city of Las Vegas and then the state of Nevada and then America and then the Earth and then the solar system and then Epsilon and then the galaxies, the universe, and then it's just overwhelming. And then you think, if there is a God, man, all of that just sits like in the palm of his hand, and it just makes you go, And there's all kinds of other nature and science types of things that make you go, we'll put some pictures up. Have you ever, like, really looked at a sunrise or a sunset? Or felt a baby kick inside the belly of his or her mother? Have you ever gotten to be in the room and seen a birth happen? It's amazing, a little freaky. Have you ever just stared, not just noticed, but stared at the full moon? Or been to the mountains? Or have you ever, like, stood on a beach and just really gazed out into the ocean, just appreciated it? Or stood at the edge of the Grand Canyon? This show you where I'm from. Have you ever gotten to watch Niagara Falls? I spent a lot of my life in Buffalo, New York, and it's right there, man. Have you ever been snorkeling or scuba diving and gotten to witness the living seas? Or just stared at a bird in flight? Have you ever gotten to see maybe an eclipse or the northern lights or a comet? And when you do, if you just pause for a second, doesn't it make you go, Now, let me ask you this. Have you ever done something that someone else took credit for? Like, maybe at your job, you completed a project and then, like, a coworker took credit for your work? Or, and I hate when this happens, maybe you said something funny, like, to, like, your friend who was sitting next to you, but you kind of, like, whispered it, and then your friend said it out loud for everyone to hear, and everyone bust out laughing, and you're like, that's my joke. Like, I'm the funny one. Like, he took my joke, right? Give me the credit. Well, I think that God's kind of got the same thing going on. And I'm not sure how God feels, but if I were God, I'd be annoyed because he's getting ripped off. He's not getting credit for his stuff. See, in the Bible, in fact, the Bible's very first verse, Genesis 1:1, says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then in the New Testament, the Bible, the part after Jesus comes, we read in Romans, it says, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. God did all the stuff that I just mentioned, and the problem is, I think, is he's not getting credit for his work. We have a phenomena that I would call the artist formerly known as God. Do you remember, and you probably have to be about 30 or older, do you remember when Prince changed his name to a symbol? Right? And it was like, oh, he's cool because he's got a symbol now, but you couldn't say the symbol, so nobody called him by it. He was known as the artist, formerly known as Prince, and then he changed his name back to Prince. Well, I think that we need to give God his name back. It's like the artist, formerly known as God, needs to be recognized as God again so that we can really appreciate life and understand how we fit in it. You know, too often, people give credit, they take it away from God, and they give it to Mother Nature or science or coincidence or evolution or Father Time or fate or chance. And maybe we need to give God back his name and recognize him as the original artist. There's a book of the Bible called Psalms, and it's a bunch of prayers and songs that people wrote a long time ago, and they kind of journaled them and put them together. And many of these prayers were written by a guy named David. When he was younger in his life, he became a king and all this stuff, but he was a big-time stargazer. I don't know if it's because maybe he woke up at 2 a.m. and was like, screw it, and went out. But he was actually a shepherd, and so he would have to take care of his sheep day and night out in the fields. And look at one of the poems, the prayers he wrote in the Bible, Psalm 19. He says, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Their voice goes out into all the earth, and the world's their words to the ends of the world." When we look at a sunset or the stars or an ocean or a birth, it speaks of the glory of God. And man, it would help us to recognize that. Did you know, it's interesting, that more and more scientists, because of the complexity, the design, and just the super natural awesome sauce of nature, are agreeing that there has to be an artist behind all of this. Awesome sauce is the technical scientific word that they use, you see. So like one of them is this guy, Paul Scowen. He's an astronomer at Arizona State University. He told the Washington Post magazine, he said, "My experience is that the more I learn about the universe, the more I believe there has to be a creator just because it's so complex." He's saying, man, because of the universe, I believe in the artist formerly known as God. He's recognizing that there has to be a mind behind the music. And he is not alone. So Dr. Owen Gingerich is a Harvard University astronomy professor. He is the senior astronomer of the Smithsonian Observatory. He says this, "A common sense and satisfying interpretation of our world suggests the designing hand of super intelligence." They're saying the complexity of the universe, there has to be somebody behind it all. And it's not just the complexity of the universe, it's also the complexity of the human body that causes people, even scientists, to go, So listen to this quote. It's pretty interesting. It's from Charles Darwin in his famous book, The Origin of Species. He writes, "To suppose that the eye, with all its inimitable," did I say that right? I think I did it. It was pretty good, right? "Contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distances, for admitting different amounts of light, and for the correction of spherical and chromatic aberration could have been formed by natural selection seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree." Darwin there is admitting it's absurd to think that even just an eye could happen without a creator. There's a guy, Dr. William Paley, he adds this. He says, "In order to keep the eye moist and clean, a wash is constantly supplied by a secretion for that purpose. And the cerephalus brine is conveyed to the nose through a perforation in the bone as large as a goose quill." How does he know how large a goose quill is? "When once the fluid has entered the nose, it spreads itself upon the inside of the nostril and is evaporated by the current of warm air, which in the course of respiration is continually passing over it. It is easy to perceive that the eye must want moisture. But could the want of the eye generate the gland which produces a tear, or bore the hole by which it is discharged, a hole through a bone? Who bored a hole through the bone? Who laid a water pipe through it for the dispersion of our tears? Now, doesn't it make you go, I mean, what is behind all this complexity? Is it random chance and evolution, or is it the choice and design of an artist formerly known as God? Is it just hammers and wires? Or maybe there's a mind behind the music. So, I want to give you an assignment. Right? I don't do this very often. Here's your assignment. I want you to go home today. And I want you to take the back off of your TV, okay? Wait till after the Dodgers game, okay? We're all going to watch the Dodgers. Just because you love me, you're going to, like, root and pray for the Dodgers. Guys, I'm wearing Dodgers socks. I have Dodgers socks on. No joke. So watch the Dodgers game, and then, and football, and then I want you to take the back off of your TV. Kids, don't ask your parents, just do it. If they're like, what are you doing? Say, church told me to do it. And so take the back off and study the inside of your TV. And there's going to be all these confusing circuits and some wires. Study it. Then I want you to go outside, sit under a nice palm tree, and I want you to just dwell on what you just examined and ask yourself this question: was that TV designed by a manufacturer for a specific purpose, or is it more likely that it was just there was a random explosion at a steel mill and it produced my TV? There's a guy named Michael Behe. He's a biochemist who wrote a book called Darwin's Black Box. The inside of the jacket that describes the book, it says this: Michael Behe is not a creationist. Okay, so he's not a Christian, he's not a God worshiper. He believes in the scientific method, and he does not look to religious dogma for answers to these questions. But he argues persuasively that biochemical machines must have been designed either by God or by some other higher intelligence. So Michael Behe studies science at the biochemical level. And what he's saying is that macroevolution is absolutely impossible at the biochemical level, which is the deepest level at which we can currently study matter. I'm going to pause. And I want to make sure that we understand the difference between macroevolution and microevolution. I think about 3 years ago, we did a message that was kind of similar, teaching different but similar, and I explained macro versus micro. I'm going to explain it in the exact same way I did then because it's the clearest way I know how to explain it, okay? So there are, scientists would say there's two types of evolution. There's macroevolution, there's microevolution. I absolutely believe in microevolution. I can't, if you said, I know a person who doesn't believe in microevolution, I'd be like, no way. That's impossible. Microevolution is the transformation that happens within a species over time. So, for instance, over time, human beings have become taller and stronger than they used to be. Exhibit A, right? All right. That is microevolution. Here's another one. Perhaps there used to be only one kind of maple tree. But today, we have red maples, we have swamp maples, we have sugar maples, we have black maples, we have Marla maples, who was married to Donald Trump, so she was almost first lady, she missed just by a little bit. All of that is, other than Marla Maples, forget that was just a joke, all of that is microevolution, okay? It's an evolutionary development within a species. It's a process of natural selection that helps a species adapt to its world over time. Microevolution. Macroevolution, very different. Macroevolution says that all living things evolved from one common ancestor, from a single-celled organism. Actually, it would go back further than that and say that in the beginning there was prehistoric goo. Just this goo. It wasn't alive. It was just goo. Somehow that goo sprang to life, became a single-celled organism, and then over time that single-cell organism led to a fish, became a fish, and then over time it became an amphibian, which led to a mammal, which led to a monkey, which led to Donald Trump. who was married to Marla Maples, and it led to the rest of us, right? Macroevolution would say we all evolved from prehistoric goo. That's our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa is the prehistoric goo. So starting with the research of Charles Darwin, microevolution has been proven. It's proven. Macroevolution was scientists taking kind of a logical leap from microevolution. Like, if a species can evolve, then one species must be able to evolve into a different species. That's how scientists talk, I guess. Listen, so there is abundant evidence for microevolution. It's fact. There's no definitive proof for macroevolution. It's a theory. In fact, Charles Darwin said that if his theory of macroevolution was correct, the fossil records would demonstrate countless transitional forms, which would be the proof of links between species. Meaning, when we do all the digs that we do, and we find dinosaur bones, and we find elephant bones, we would also find bones of something that was half this and half that, because species evolved from one species to another. So there would be a long period of time where it was in between, and we would find fossils that were half this and half that. He said, if my theory of macroevolution is true, there will be tons of those fossils. Well, fossils like that had not been discovered when he first published his book, The Origin of Species, back in 1859, but he said they're going to be discovered. They have to, because this is the theory. 150 years later, still not one single such fossil has been found. Fossils continue to be found, thousands and hundreds of thousands, but they are all fossils of fully developed and fully distinct species of plants and of animals. So there's no proof that one species has ever transitioned into a different species. And if you talk to anyone who's honest, they'll agree with that. They still may hold on to the theory of macroevolution, but they would say, yes, that's true. We've never found any evidence for it. So in this book that I mentioned, this guy, Michael Behe, is saying that when Darwin proposed his theory of macroevolution, science was not yet developed enough to study the biochemical level of matter. And so at that point, it's what scientists call a black box. Here's what Michael Behe explains. I know you're like, there's a lot of science today. I don't know if I like this. There won't be any more science the rest of this series. This is just today. So Michael Behe writes, he says, a black box is a term for a device that does something, but whose inner workings are mysterious, sometimes because the workings can't be seen, and sometimes because they just aren't comprehensible, okay? So in science, a black box is something that's like, we can't look in there. We don't know what's going on in there. Well, in Darwin's time, the cell was a black box. Darwin had no reason to believe that the cell was any more complex than a ping pong ball. But now we know different. And so now scientists like Michael Behe are studying the cell, and they're saying, Darwin couldn't have known this, but when you study the cell, and you study bacteria, and you study blood clotting, when you consider life at the biochemical level of things, macroevolution, Michael Behe is saying, is not possible. And so it's like Darwin was this daring mouse who climbed up the part of the piano, saw these tightly stretched wires, and came up with a theory. But I would say, whether scientists believe in him or not, the unseen artist continues to play. The artist formerly known as God, there is a mind behind the music. And Michael Behe is brave enough to stand up and say, hey, I am a student of science, but I believe that there has to be an intelligent designer that composed science itself. And although Michael Behe doesn't use the word God, he's not a believer in God, he is casting his vote for some kind of unseen pianist, this artist formerly known as God. He's saying there must be a mind behind the music. And it all goes even beyond the complexity of the universe and of the human body. There's another factor that scientists point to that make many of them believe that there has to be an intelligent designer. In fact, they would say it's the most powerful evidence of all. They call it the anthropic principle. So the anthropic principle refers to the fact that light, that the Earth is perfectly designed for human life. There's a guy named Robert Collins. He has a PhD from the University of Texas and another PhD from the University of Notre Dame. He's done all kinds of research and analysis, and he's become an outspoken proponent for the design of the universe. He suggests that the fine-tuning of the universe to allow for life on Earth to happen is the most persuasive argument for the existence of God. And he uses this, I think, great illustration to talk about how important it is to understand that the Earth was perfectly set up to sustain life. He says that, suppose astronauts landed on Mars, pick your favorite planet, and they land on Mars and they're exploring and they find an enclosed biosphere. I don't know if you remember, but like back in, I think it was the 90s maybe, there was a biosphere that was built in Arizona. Was it not the 90s? Was it the 90s? Whenever it was. So that's it. So this was built in Arizona. That's still in Arizona, I believe. And so what they did is they created that as like the perfect thing for human beings to live in. Like no matter what happened outside of it, there could be a nuclear war. If you're in that thing, you're good. It's perfectly designed to live in there. They said, suppose that these astronauts land on Mars and that thing is there. Like, they're like, whoa, there's a biosphere here. It is perfectly set up to sustain life. Oxygen, temperature, gravity, humidity, energy, Twinkies, everything you need to live is in this biosphere. Everything is perfect to support human life. Collins says, if scientists discovered that, this biosphere on Mars, they would know that someone had taken very great care and design to build that structure, right? There's no way they'd go, maybe it was an accident. Maybe it just happened. It couldn't have just happened by chance. They would know. Well, guess what? That is exactly the structure of our world, only on a much grander and more amazing scale. Our universe has been precisely tweaked as to support life on Earth. There's an interesting article by this guy, Dr. Hugh Ross. He's a physicist. What he did is he asked the question, like, what needs to be true of Earth for a human being to live here? And he came up with these 72 characteristics of the universe and of our solar system that had to be absolutely perfectly fine-tuned. If any one of them was just a teeny bit different, life could not exist, okay? 72 characteristics that are all true of planet Earth. And then he went on to calculate, so what's the probability that all 72 of those characteristics could be true of any planet? And the answer is, the probability that they could all be true for one planet is 1 in 10 to the 65th power, which is one chance in 10 million trillion trillion trillion. I don't even know how you can write that many zeros. 1 in 10 million, trillion, trillion, trillion. Now, I am not saying that any of that proves creation beyond any reasonable doubt. Okay? Here's what I will say. It takes faith to believe either model. It takes faith. It takes faith to believe in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And it takes faith to believe that all of this comes from random chance and evolution. But I will say for me, in light of all the information we just looked at and all those numbers, I just don't have enough faith to be an atheist. But like when I look at all those numbers, they're just too impossible. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. And it's not just me. The truth is, more and more scientists are giving God back his name. At least to some degree, they are, because they're realizing that there just has to be a mind behind the music. So listen to some of these quotes. Science Digest writes, "Scientists who utterly reject evolution may be one of our fastest growing minorities in the scientific community. Many of these scientists hold impressive credentials in science." And then several years ago, 60 world-class scientists, including 24 Nobel Prize winners, produced a book called Cosmos, Bios, and Theos. And in this book, Yale physicist Dr. Henry Morgenhau says this. He writes, "There is only one convincing answer for the intricate laws that exist in the natural world, and that is creation by an omnipotent, all-wise God." Another scientist, Dr. George Howe, writes, "The chance that one useful DNA molecule could develop without a designer is approximately zero." Donald Duck used to say, I just had to break this up a little bit. There's a lot of science. Sir Fred Hoyle, who's a professor of astronomy at Cambridge University, not a Christian, says, "To suppose that the first cell originated by chance is like believing that a tornado could sweep through a junkyard filled with airplane parts and form a Boeing 747. He goes on to say, "Once we see that the probability of life originating at random is so utterly minuscule as to make it absurd, it becomes sensible to think that the favorable properties of physics on which life depends," that's those 72 characteristics, "are deliberate, and that our intelligence must reflect a higher intelligence at work." Paul Davies is a physicist, also not a Christian. He writes, "The very fact that the universe is created and that it has permitted complex structures to emerge and develop to the point of consciousness, in other words, the very fact that the universe has organized its own self-awareness, is for me powerful evidence that there is something going on behind it all. The impression of design is overwhelming." And I am no scientist at all, but I have to agree. I mean, you just look at the world, at the beauty and the power and the complexity, and it just makes you go, right? And it leads me to think that the most logical and probable conclusion that we can come to when we look at the design of the world and the mindful way that everything is set up so that human beings can exist on this one particular planet is that there is an unseen pianist at work here, an artist formerly known as God. There has to be a mind behind the music, an invisible God who loves us and created this world to house us and protect us. So, maybe the next time you're on the beach checking out the ocean, or you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, screw it, and you go outside and you just look at all the stars, or you feel a baby kick in his mother's stomach, or you see this beautiful garden of roses, or you taste a perfect strawberry, or you get your eyes examined, or you go up to the mountains and you look at them, maybe just pause for a second and go, Maybe even take some time and worship. Worship the God who is behind all of this. And if you're not convinced yet, that's okay. That's okay. Would you do me a favor? Actually, I think you'd be doing yourself a favor. Would you consider maybe spending some time under the stars this week? Doesn't have to be at 2 a.m. by yourself. And while you're there, staring up at the heavens, pray. Pray. Maybe if you're kind of like, I'm new to this, maybe just pray a simple prayer like this. God, I don't know if you're real. I don't know if you created all this. But if you are real and this is all from you, I'd like to know. And I'd like to know you. And I'll tell you what, when you do come, if you do come to a place where you believe this, that there is a mind behind the music, or maybe a lot of us have come to that point, it makes all the difference in the world, right? This is not just a philosophical debate. Creation or chance, random or design or evolution. No. This, I know that there was a lot of science today, and some of you are like, I'm not into all the science stuff, but this is not about science. This means everything when it comes to your everyday life. right? Like, this means that we are not the victims of random fate. It means that there is a sovereign, supernatural creator God who is behind it all. And that is so important, because if this life isn't just an accident, but is part of a plan, even though I may not understand the plan and I may not understand what's happening in my life, man, I can have comfort and encouragement and hope. Like, it gives me the strength I need to carry on, because I know that there is a God who is taking care of me. This also means that there is value and there is dignity attached to every single human life, because every life is created by God in the image of God. If it's not true that there's a mind behind the music, then life is extraneous. Individual life is not important at all. But if there is a mind behind the music, that means your life matters. It matters so much. And it means that we have dignity and we have value because we belong to someone. Remember in the Toy Story movies where they would find out that he has Andy's name written on his foot, and people were like, oh, you're not a random toy. You belong to someone. You have dignity and value because you have an owner. If there's a mind behind the music, you have a name written on the bottom of your foot and you matter. Your life matters. It also means that we have a responsibility to be good stewards of our world, of the environment. Personally, maybe this is just me, but I can't understand people who think that the world came about by chance and is a big accident, but also think that we need to care for and protect it because it's so important. I would say, well, if it's an accident, who cares? But if God made it, then it's his property, not ours. And we need to treat our world with respect and take good care of it because it's his world. And last, if we were created by God in the image of God, it means that we were made to have a relationship with him. God created us in a very special way to have relationship with him. He created us to be connected to him, intimate with him, and we cannot live out our life's purpose or reach our full potential outside of a relationship with our creator, God. Listen, you and I live in an amazing world, and it makes you go, you realize there's a God behind all this. And the most unbelievable and amazing thing of all is that God loves you. Like, even with that huge universe, and you're like, I'm just some little person, but God thinks you are so important and he wants to have a relationship with you. I think that's what we all want. And if you're like, I want to learn more about that, man, go to Next Step. Jacob in a couple of minutes is going to tell you what Next Step is, but we designed a really cool class kind of thing for you. What we're going to do right now is we're going to give you just a little time to connect with God. That's what you are made for. Some time to worship him. And when you realize that God made all this, you can't not worship him for it. When I sat out at 2:30 in the morning staring up at those stars, it's like I didn't go out there to worship God, but I couldn't help it. Like, I started praying and singing. It's like, look what God has done. And so you can use these next couple minutes for that. And you can use this time to remember that he came to our world. Jesus came, God in the form of Jesus came to our planet, the planet that he designed to support human life. He came to and lived a human life. He lived a human life, and then he died a sacrificial death. He died because it was the only way to take our sins away so that we could have the relationship with God that we were made for. And so during this time, we have communion available. It's on the candlelit tables around the room, and it's a piece of bread and a cup of juice that remind us of Jesus' body and blood given on the cross for us. And it's a way that we can remember and be thankful that he made a way for us to have a relationship with the God who made us for relationship with him. So I'm going to pray, and then our band's going to play a song, and you have this time to worship, to take communion if you like, whatever you need to do. All right, let's pray. God, I don't know where we're all at today and I know there's people watching online all over, and I don't know where they're all at today. Maybe some of us are like, I don't know if I believe that there is a God. But man, you look at the immensity and complexity of the universe and of the human body. Even scientists who say I don't want to believe in a God are saying there's got to be someone who created all this. And maybe it's time for us to look deeper for you. God, a lot of us, we do believe. And God, would you use nature as a way of you holding out your hand and seeking us? Would you help us when we see the stars, when we see a sunset, to think of you and to worship? That is the proper response. This whole world was made for your glory, to worship you. And would you help us to do that even right now as we spend these next few minutes with you and as we remember Jesus coming to our planet to save us. We pray in his name. Amen.